Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Ka'Chava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor, crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans with 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to ka'chava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's ka'chava.com, code FITNESS.
This episode sponsored by Good Ranchers. Good Ranchers delivers 100% American meat straight to your door. Every cut is sourced from local U.S. farms and ranches, and the entire packaging and fulfillment process takes place right here in America before it's delivered to your doorstep. No imports, ever. Just high-quality, 100% American beef, chicken, pork, and wild-caught seafood. I'm a subscriber, and my plan is incredibly easy to manage. Traveling? Need to skip a delivery? You can pause, move, or adjust your order anytime in just a few clicks. Right now, when you start your plan, you'll get free meat in every box for life, plus $25 off your first order with code RANCH25. Go to GoodRanchers.com and use code RANCH25 to start your Good Ranchers plan today.
What does the Titans' free agency approach reveal about their plans for the 2026 NFL Draft? We have some thoughts, plus Justin Mello has some real inside intel that tells us what they're planning to do at a position of need. This is the Music City Audible live for free agency day 4. Let's get to it! Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Music City Audible Live, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey. And joining me, as always, the managing editor of Titan Sized and the publisher of NFL Draft on SI, my co-host, Justin Mello. How is it going today, Justin?
Doing well. Titans have been a little bit busy.
Yeah.
A little bit-ish since we last reconvened, if you will, or whatever you'd like to call it. But a couple moves we got to cover. They lost a bunch of guys since we last spoke. I think ones that we anticipated, but we're going to cover that as well. Talk a little, you know, free agency. They just signed a guy about 2 minutes ago before we came live on the air here.
Yeah.
And they made a trade last night, uniforms tonight, free agency. I got some inside info, draft. We got a loaded show tonight. Today, if you will, depending on where you are. If you're in Australia, it might be tonight. Loaded show on the Music City Audible.
Yes, and Jim Martin thanks us for not talking about the jerseys. Look, we're going to talk about the jerseys tomorrow. I mean, what's the point? The reveal event for tonight, I believe the doors open at 6:30 Central, 6:45 Central, something like that. The actual event says the start time is 7:30, but I saw a release from the Titans that said it's going to start closer to 7:45 p.m. Central time tonight. So still TBD, I think. It was reported that it will not be live streamed or shown anywhere. I don't know how much I buy that. I mean, the Titans YouTube account might have something up. So we'll be tracking that. We'll be looking at that. But that's not the focus of this episode. If you're tuned in live, thank you for joining us. Hope you're having a great Thursday, sitting in an office somewhere, maybe in a quiet room so nobody sees you watching us instead of actually doing your work. Or maybe you work from home. That's the ideal setup. That's what we both have, that setup. And we don't have to worry about who's peeking over our shoulder, what we're watching on YouTube at the office. So, Justin, as you mentioned, Titans make a move right before we come on. They've made a lot of moves. They've addressed a lot of holes. And we think this tells us a little about how they're going to attack the draft. I think we have some intel on their draft strategy. And I want to be clear right off the bat that the thumbnail that brought you into this episode was a misdirect. It was a tease. Because this plan is not necessarily about what they're going to do at 4 overall, but rather what they're going to do to attack some positions that they still really need to address, how comfortable you and I feel with those positions being a rookie, potentially, maybe two rookies. I mean, let's go one rookie there. But we'll get to that in a second. I do think we can have the conversation about number 4 overall, especially with the edge hole that they still have on the roster and the playmaking ability that Jeremiah Love would bring. But all of that put it on pause for a second, because let's talk about the latest transactions the Titans have made, starting with the literal latest one, which, as you said, just happened. The Titans have signed another edge rusher, Jacob Martin. So the Titans have a guy who is more of a rotational rusher, probably ideal as a third or even fourth rusher. Right now, he is the second most accomplished edge rusher on the Titans roster. That could change, obviously, with the draft. There's a great comment that came in right before we started that I want to touch on, too, that could be very interesting. Thoughts on this move? I mean, does this guy immediately become edge two for now? Or would you still have Jalen Harrell or Femi Oladejo listed ahead of him?
I don't want to throw like a, you know, piss on the parade because everyone's always excited. But I think I see a lot of Titans fans getting ahead of themselves. I don't think this move like moves them forward at all. In all honesty, I guess I'm tired of having a bunch of number 3, 4, and 5 edge rushers because that's what this whole room is made up of right now. And they've essentially just added another in Jacob Martin. Pros and cons. He's 30 years old. He's been on 6 NFL teams in the last 4 years, okay? That is the definition of a veteran journeyman. Pros, yeah, decent year last year. 5.5 sacks, 40-some pressures for the Commanders, about 20 quarterback hits. Decent pass rushing grade for Pro Football Focus. John Keim, who covers the team, has been covering for a long time, he's really, really good at it, said, tweeted he's a smart player and that he was effective for the Commanders last year, very useful. I guess for me, I was already thinking that this room, and so you might need a fifth rusher. And that's maybe where I went wrong, but I was thinking draft pick, Jermaine Johnson, Jalen Harrell, Femi Oladejo are going to be your 4 pass rushers. Well, now they've added Jacob Martin, but he's a depth guy. Like off air, you pissed me off without doing it on purpose by saying, oh, you know, like he's the number 3. I mean, if he's your number 3, this is going to be a bad pass rushing team. He's not a number 3 caliber edge rusher. I think you can group him in with Oladejo and Harrell and say you let them battle it out, and the best one is your number 3, the second best one's your number 4, and the loser of that battle is your number 5, who's still like a roster, you know, Ali Gay, right? Like on the 53-man roster, but shouldn't play a lot. Now, this guy's better than Ali Gay, in my opinion. So if you want to look at it from the perspective that they've raised the floor of the room, I would say they have done that. I guess why I'm being a little negative is they've got enough of these guys. And they don't have enough number 1s and number 2s. And so don't get ahead of yourself and say, well, now they're going Jeremiah Love at number 4. Like, they're going to be a bad edge rushing room if this guy makes them not take an edge early. So for me, It's whatever. He's a decent football player. He's a smart football player. He's a 53-man roster caliber football player. But he's not. They got a bunch of those guys, not enough stars at the position. And it's certainly not a move that moves the needle and shouldn't really alter their draft plans, in my opinion.
So if we look at his career history, obviously in 2022, he was with Saleh. With the New York Jets, which is just another guy. He's collecting these guys like Infinity Stones, except that there's only 5 Infinity Stones. And Saleh has added more than 5 guys that he coached in New York and San Francisco. Joining a group that includes Jermaine Johnson and John Franklin Myers, Aaron Whitecotton, Tanzel Smart, Robert Saleh, all reunited, and one other guy that we're about to talk about after we finish Jacob Martin. So he had 5.5 sacks last year per the official NFL stat. You'll see here on the screen if you're watching on YouTube that PFF credited him with 8 sacks. That's because we've talked about this before. PFF credits a half a sack as a sack. They're like, you sacked the quarterback. I don't care if your teammate was there helping you bring him down. You get a full sack for that. He did play 700 snaps last year, which is a pretty considerable number of snaps in terms of like his ability to get out there and make an impact and be on the field and not be a liability. The flip side of that is that Washington Commanders did not have a good defense last year. Exactly. If we compare him to Jalen Harrell, though, which I do want to do, because I think that Jalen Harrell is a better player maybe than he gets credit for. Jalen Harrell, 6 sacks last year. Again, PFF tracking numbers, half sacks counted as full sacks on less than half the snaps. 362 snaps for Harrell, which is, you know, on the one hand, well, he's more of a role younger player. He doesn't play as much. But on the other hand, more productive with less, almost, I mean, on a per snap basis, more productive with fewer opportunities. So I do think there's a world where these two guys compete, where Jalen Harrell turns out to be, you know, a solid role player. I don't think he's ever going to be a star edge rusher, but I think he could develop into one of those third guys that is a DPR that comes in and can make an impact randomly, unpredictably at times. So definitely something to keep in mind there. Let's talk about the other guy that they acquired on the D-line, because they trade pick 225 to the Dallas Cowboys for Solomon Thomas.
Yes.
And pick 218.
So well, they must have been the other way around. They didn't. They must have gotten 225, no, for 218.
Sorry, you're right. They traded pick 218 and Solomon Thomas to the Dallas Cowboys for pick 225.
You messed that up again. They traded pick 218 to the Dallas Cowboys for Solomon Thomas and pick 225. That's essentially, that is literally the definition of free. I mean, yeah. I don't know, like moving seven picks back in the middle of the seventh round is free. They essentially signed Solomon Thomas off free agency. So it does feel like a guy who was drafted 20 years ago, Jim. Fun fact, him and Mitch Trubisky, two busts in the same draft. The Titans now have both of them, number two and number three overall. I think that's really funny. Really. And is that, was that the Corey Davis year? They also had Corey Davis, number five overall.
That was 2017.
So anyways, sorry?
2017 was Corey Davis.
You sure? That long ago?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyways, they pick up Solomon Thomas. Surprise, surprise. One thing I think you didn't mention about you did mention he had played for Saleh, but he had also played for Gus Bradley. They continue to collect guys. Solomon Thomas played for Robert Saleh, I think on numerous occasions, like with the Jets and San Francisco. Knows him well. That is your number four defensive tackle, in my opinion. And I would go as far as to say it completes the defensive tackle room. Last year, you had Jeffrey Simmons, Tavondre Sweat, Sebastian Joseph Day, and James Lynch, essentially, right, as your top four D tackles. Now you've got Jeffrey Simmons, John Franklin Myers. You've replaced Sebastian Joseph Day with Jordan Elliott, and you've replaced James Lynch with Solomon Thomas. All three new faces, having played for Robert Saleh before, they continue to collect guys that this staff is comfortable with, that know the scheme, that know the playbook, also that fit the culture. I retweeted a piece yesterday. Go read it if you haven't, by a Cowboys writer who wrote something on Solomon Thomas's personal life and regarding his sibling. He's a fantastic human being, Walter Payton Man of the Year type of guy, excellent culture builder, the locker room kind of guy that Mike Borgonzi loves and is looking for. Again, they gave up nothing. I don't mind what they gave up. I don't think he's an outstanding player. I think he's an all okay player, but he's probably only going to play like 15 to, you know, on the low end to 25% of their snaps on a weekly basis, assuming everyone is healthy. Again, they gave up nothing. LRX, you say it feels like an upgrade. I'll be honest with you, I like Sebastian Joseph Day better than I like Jordan Elliott and Solomon Thomas. I think that's just the honest truth. A lot of Titans fans probably don't want to admit, because you always want to like the new guys they brought in. But I've been saying it every episode the last week. This is what happens when you bring in new regimes. Sometimes they sacrifice slightly better players for guys that they're more comfortable with, because they know the scheme. They know the culture that they're trying to build in the locker room. They know the playbook, the system, all that. So are we sacrificing? Ritmo, I think not a lot of that has happened, but I do think maybe a little bit. Like, I do think Sebastian Joseph Day is better than the two D tackles they've brought in. I think it's debatable at center and cornerback as well, more so on the depth moves. We're going to talk about those guys that left in a little bit. But when it comes to the starters, I think John Franklin Myers is better, to be honest with you, my opinion, than Tavondre Sweat. I know they're very different players, but in terms of, you know, the role and the snap count you're asking them to play, I think you compare, you know, Franklin Myers to Sweat. And I think that's an upgrade. I think Wandell Robinson is an upgrade in the wide receiver room. Alante Taylor and Cordell Flott are obviously upgrades in the corner room. But when it comes to the depth, guys, the weeds of the roster, I do think it's possible that they've sacrificed some slightly better players for guys they're more comfortable with.
I think it's a case-by-case basis for me. Like, I think Cordell Volson and Austin Schlottman are as good or better than Blake Hance and Corey Levin. I mean,
I think it's probably a wash.
You're splitting hairs there. Like, those guys are about the same level. On the defensive line, I do agree that there may be some element of, like, the role players. I don't think they've, like, necessarily gotten worse overall, like, as a unit. I think Sebastian Joseph Day is a starting level player. So he ranks above Jordan Elliott and Solomon Thomas.
But that's who they replaced them with. So that's the comparison.
Right. But not really, though, because Sebastian Joseph Day was on the field as a starter in 3-4 sets where you had Simmons, Sweat, and SJD. Now you only have two tackles in those sets because you're in a 4-3 look. And John Franklin Myers is an upgrade over any of those, over Sweat, over Sebastian Joseph Day. Like, forget the roles and forget. And I know Tyler of Locked On Titans has been talking about how, like, John Franklin Myers is a replacement for this guy and Jordan Elliott is a replacement for this guy. And, like, you're all getting it confused. I disagree, because you can't look at the roles that the defensive lineman had on the Titans defense last year and project that to this year, because it's a different looking front. You're going from an odd front to an even front. So the roles change. It's not like John Franklin Myers is the new Sweat and Jordan Elliott is the new SJD. Like, John Franklin Myers is the new blend of the both of them, and he's better than either of them. So that's a massive upgrade to me. Along your starting defensive line, you have done nothing but upgrade. Jermaine Johnson, to me, depending on how he bounces back, continues to bounce back from the torn Achilles from 2 years ago, to me, better than Arden Key. Jeffrey Simmons is Jeffrey Simmons. John Franklin Myers is better than Tavondre Sweat or Sebastian Joseph Day. And Jacob Martin is as good or better than Femi Oladejo, Jalen Harrell, Ali Gay. It's like, that's like a wash when at that spot, right?
For me, you won't convince me on the SP Day one, only because I get what you're saying, like, in terms of, like, the philosophy, different looks, personnel. But at the end of the day, I think you asked, like, what did SJD play? I don't think he played more than 25% of snaps per game. He wasn't on the field.
Really?
I mean, take a look. Well, how many defensive snaps did he play this year? Check Pro Football Reference
right now.
Right now. I just think
he played
that,
483. Yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah, 483.
What's the percent? They give a percentage too.
Not on this screen.
Pro Football Reference definitely does. Okay.
I mean, they must have had 1,000 to 1,200 defensive snaps. So that's about a third, 25% to 33%.
And, like, you're asking those snaps to be replaced, in my opinion, by worse players. That's what I'm anticipating. It was about 45% for SJD, so actually a little higher than I would have guessed. But if you're asking one of these guys to play 30%, I think you got worse there. But again, everywhere else, I think for the most part, you're splitting hairs.
So you think the defensive line that they have currently rostered, and this, you know, they could add a rookie at number 4 or number 35 or whatever, but currently rostered, forget what's coming. You think
it's
worse?
Not what I said. Just that 1-for-1. I think that 1-for-1, they got worse. But I think the John Franklin Myers addition is so big that they're top heavier now than they were a year ago. And I'm fine with that, because the two guys they got at the top should be elite and should be outstanding. I think when it comes to replacing SGD, they got worse.
Yes, maybe. But I think as a group, it's better. And I do think that, like, the overall depth is better. Like, Sebastian Joseph Day may be better than Jordan Elliott, but Jordan Elliott plus Solomon Thomas plus Jacob Martin is better than Ali Gay. And
if we're talking interior only, Jacob Martin's an edge, and I don't think Solomon Thomas is any better than James Lynch. I think that's probably a wash.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm talking about the defensive line as a whole, and you agree it's better this year. So if they have to swap out one depth guy's ability for a slightly worse depth guy, but the overall unit is stronger, and I think the depth of the overall unit is stronger. Like, SJD and Lynch were good players, but Lynch was a depth piece. Again, SJD was a starter. In a base set, SJD was a starter, and your starters are now better than they were last year. So anyway, we're getting in the weeds here. But let's take a quick break, Justin, because then we got to come back and talk about why the draft needs have been revealed to us, or the draft plan has been revealed to us. We will be right back.
Suffering from seasonal irritants? As the pollen count rises, support your immune system with Quiksilver Scientific Cystaid, a targeted blend of nutrients and botanicals designed to help maintain healthy histamine balance and everyday comfort. Quiksilver Scientific Cystaid works with your body's natural response to seasonal environmental challenges, so you can feel your best all season long. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Kachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans. Quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Kachava's all-in-one nutrition shake and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Whether you're craving that coffee taste to kickstart your morning ritual or as a nutrient-packed reward to round out your afternoon, Kachava keeps you fueled and satisfied wherever your day takes you. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. And for the times you feel like switching it up, you've got 7 flavors to choose from, all with the highest quality ingredients. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to kachava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's kachava.com, code FITNESS.
Sleeping hot? Waking up sweaty at 2 a.m.? It's not you, it's your sheets, and Care Aloha is your answer. They're the original for bamboo sheets that are naturally breathable, moisture-wicking, and luxuriously soft, designed to keep hot sleepers cool and comfortable all night long. You can feel the difference in how much cooler you sleep. Care Aloha's innovative bamboo fabric pulls heat away from your body, so you fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer without cranking the AC. Improve your sleep tonight. Shop Care Aloha bamboo sheets now at carealoha.com. That's carealoha.com. Cooler sleep starts with Care Aloha.
Welcome back, our audio audience.
I'm doing radio. Just remember, I mean, I'm telling the live audience too, I'm doing ESPN in Huntsville in about 15 minutes. So we could continue. I might go on mute to do that, but that conversation was way too long because there was other things we wanted to cover. But sorry, go ahead. The draft.
Yeah. So I'm going to get to some of these questions because they do quickly. Let's just knock this question out from Blue Bomber. I've seen this a couple times now. Justin's, how are we feeling about Jack Conklin being released? Put Conklin at right tackle and Latham at right guard, or am I crazy? Or you can move Conklin to right guard. Look, Conklin's not coming back. Okay, Jack Conklin was drafted 10 years ago now and has had a very, when he's on the field, he's been great, but the last few years especially, just riddled with injuries. There's no way they bring Jack Conklin back. I don't know why he would want to come back. I just don't see this happening.
Rapid fire, too. Rapid fire. Yeah. You are crazy. They're not moving Latham to right guard. Sorry, Blue Bomber. I don't like it.
Yep, it's not happening. Okay, this is the other conversation that is related to everything we just talked about in that first block. From Bird, someone made a good point in the comments earlier. Saleh hasn't always had elite edge rushers. It's from Enrique SATX. I'm looking at Saleh's Jets defenses. None had elite edge rushers, but stacked interior D-line. Any chance we think they aren't going to prioritize edge and still take Love at 4? Get back to that in a second. Enrique also said Bryce Huff was the leader in sacks with 10 in 2023, the leader for the Jets 2023 team. He might get cut by the 49ers this week. Reunion time. Lulo and Stitch says, these edge rushers enough to convince you off an elite edge in the draft? Feels like your signs point towards Jay Love.
McShay has...
No, well, these are all related to the same conversation. I wanted to hit them. McShay has alluded to Love at 4 or even Tate if it comes down to value. Here's the other big one that made sense. Replace Quinnen Williams. At the Jets under Robert Saleh. Replace Quinnen Williams with Big Jeff. And our D-line matches Jets from Saleh's days. This doesn't tip our hand, but I think they're a good pass rush targets in round 2. I agree.
They had better edge rushers. I'd say the Jets' room was better at edge than the Titans is right now.
Right now. The defensive tackle combined for 18.5 sacks last year. How many resources do you want to throw at this while leaving camp? This is a good point on the interior rush. It's the one that we've made this week, too. And this is the final one from Bill Dance. I think this makes it obvious we're in on Bryce Huff. Similar players, but Huff is a good speed rusher to pair with Jermaine Johnson.
Here's the other thing. Jacob Martin's a little redundant. He's also, if you don't know, an undersized speed rusher. So I think right now he would be like the backup to Jermaine Johnson because he's kind of similar.
If the Titans acquire Bryce Huff somehow, whether by late round trade swap again or the 49ers cut him and they grab him, does it make you feel better about the group? I mean, I know Bryce Huff has not been the same guy he was under Saleh, but he would be under Saleh again.
Still not a high-end guy, but better than Martin, better than Harrell, better than Oladejo right now. By the way, text from a Commander's source right now, someone I trust. You'll love Jacob Martin, rotational guy, had to do everything this past year with all the injuries they had in the room. Very tough, very productive. You will like him in Tennessee. Text from a Commander's source just now. Interesting.
That's a good note. Ken Bonds, rotation is key to the new defense. Being fresh and giving 100% every down wears out that O-line. I do think that's the approach that they're looking to bring here. So lots of good comments there. And I want to cover why I do think, I mean, look, you're not going to get me off this train. I do think that everything they've done doesn't point to or not point to, but it does keep the door open for them to draft Jeremiah Love at 4 overall and push the edge need to either later in the draft or even in a crazy world, next year entirely. Give Femi Oladejo that real shot to be a contributor or even a starter. Use this rotation you have. See if Jalen Harrell takes another step in his development. Because again, and I don't know how many times we need to say this, and it definitely gets lost this time of year when you add all these new players and hope springs eternal, that the Titans probably aren't going to be that good in 2026. Like, they might be a lot better than they were last year, but there's so much space between where they were last year and good that they can land in that is a big improvement, but still not really good. And every team has a hole somewhere on their roster. Every team enters every year with a hole somewhere, and maybe you're the Eagles of 2024, and as the season develops, you realize your young players like Cooper DeJean erased the holes you thought you entered the season with. And sometimes, you know, you overcome those holes with other good players at other good positions and usually with superstar power. So the Titans are going to have a hole somewhere on this team. And if that hole is one of the two edge spots and they push that to the next year and they say, you know, if we show enough promise this season, we could go make a big splash move and get a veteran edge mercenary to come join this team and take us over the top. Like, I wouldn't hate that as the plan. So if they do still feel like getting playmakers around Cam Ward is priority number one, which it hasn't necessarily been in free agency outside of Wandale Robinson, then I could totally see Jeremiah Love still being the plan at number four. Todd McShay has been pointing out how the teams, you know, beyond pick five don't see Jeremiah Love getting to them, maybe beyond pick six with the Commanders. The Giants are bringing in Jeremiah Love for a visit, I think this week or now. I just saw the report this morning that they're going to meet with Jeremiah Love. So the Giants still in play at five, but hugely in play at four, despite the hole that is still sitting there at one of the two edge spots.
I guess the only thing that I've got to say on the subject is I think they've raised the floor of this edge room. I still don't think it's good. In fact, it might even be bad right now because, again, your best edge rusher on the roster right now, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills, had three sacks last year and was totally ineffective, and you're projecting it because he's coming off, you know, he had an Achilles. So you're projecting him to be better in 2026. He had three sacks last year, okay? Listen, this edge room is not good. It is bad. They can take Jeremiah Love at four. I think they've raised the floor of the edge room. They're bringing in guys like Jacob Martin, Jermaine Johnson, Malik Herring, who I don't even think makes the roster, but he's there too. They've raised the floor. If they draft Jeremiah Love at four, and I'm not saying I'm opposed, I'm giving you reality, they will be bad on the edge. So, and they've been bad the last couple of years on the edge for the most part. So as long as you're okay with being bad on the edge, then that's fine. But don't convince yourself that they could take Jeremiah Love at four and probably be good on the edge. I do not see that in the forecast whatsoever.
I like this comment from Jordan. Moneyball it. Get the pressure and sacks from cheaper contracts combined for this year. Help Cam now in the draft, which is number one priority. I have faith in Saleh up front to hold it down.
You're
this season.
You're going to get a lot of sacks from Simmons and Franklin Myers too. Right, for sure.
This is a good question from JTurn314. Is there any roster guarantees for Pollard coming due between now and the draft that could give us some really definitive direction? No. Tony Pollard is in the last year of his cap of his, sorry, the last year of his cap, the last year of his contract with the Titans. If they cut him, they save about a little over $7 million on this season, and they can do that anytime before the season starts. It's not like Calvin Ridley and L'Jarius Sneed, who have guarantees due on March 16th and will probably be off the roster by March 16th, at least Sneed, goodness gracious, unless he can't pass a physical, which is the holdup there, is that he's coming off a big injury and his contract has an injury guarantee there. Even if he is cut before March 16th, if he is cut without passing a physical before March 16th, the Titans owe him $7.5 million, which is crazy. Who negotiated that contract? I guess Mike Borgonzi, but he negotiated the trade from the Chiefs side, and then Chad Brinker negotiated the contract, Rand Carthon. Who knows? These are some, it's a good group of edge rushers that should be there in the second round. TJ Parker, Zion Young, R. Mason Thomas. His first name is literally R. Space Mason. And if you haven't read the story on why, you should go look that up. It has to do with his mom wanting to name all the children starting with R names. Malachi Lawrence, Derek Moore, all second round help. Those are good players. Okay, Justin, we need to get to the real thing that we learned, that we know, that nobody else knows. That you learned it, and nobody else knows it yet. And I'm that is what the Titans...
I told you I was doing radio at 10:30 Central, so...
Right, so we got 2 minutes to get...
questions and hold the fort down?
Oh, you're doing it now. It's not 10:30. It's 10:27. I thought we had time. All right, I will do exactly what Justin just said. I will answer some questions and hold the fort down. This is a good one. Have either of you even played football before? I did play football. I played football, started when I was 10, I believe, with tackle football for the Denver Broncos in my little league PSA football league. I might be the only player in history to have played these two positions. I played wide receiver and defensive line. That's right. I was a defensive lineman when I was 10 years old. I was the lightest, smallest player in the entire league. And I know that because they weighed these players because there was a weight limit on if you were too heavy, you weren't allowed to touch the football because these other little kids couldn't tackle you. And when I played as the smallest, lightest player on the defensive line, like I was literally so small but so quick that when the ball was snapped, I basically just like crawled on the ground at the ankles of these offensive linemen around me and got in the backfield on almost every play. I had multiple fumble recoveries, strips, fumbles forced. Like that was my thing. It was pretty cool to be the smallest guy on the field and be making an impact in the backfield on almost every play. We will look, who are we banging the table for on day three? That we are so far away from the draft that I know Melo has some names, but I honestly don't have my names yet. We'll get there. We'll get there. Yes, bring me in to play edge. I don't know if that tactic would work against NFL edge rushers. I am a lot smaller than them still, probably, but they might just, you know, dive on, sit on top of me and kill me. Chat, on a scale of 1 to 10, how yes or no are you on obscure questions as I yell into the mic, Two Rivers 4. This is mean, but it's funny. I love that people want to bring me in at edge now. I could talk more about why love at four is becoming inevitable. So here's the thing. There is a positional value debate to be had. Obviously, we all know that. And I saw a thread recently by, I want to say, Lindsey Jones, but I'm not 100% sure who made this thread. It was basically a thread that explained why drafting a running back at number four overall doesn't help your team. It doesn't increase wins. A first round running, a top 10 running back in general. And she looked most recently at Bijan Robinson and Ashton Jeanty, two teams who did not improve in the win column despite drafting a running back in the top 10. And my rebuttal to that is bad teams are bad. Okay, the Cleveland Browns had Myles Garrett this year. How'd that work out for them? The Raiders had Max Crosby this year. How'd that work out for them? Like, some teams are bad despite adding a good player at a premium position. Some teams add a player at a premium position and become good. Some teams add a player at a non-premium position and become good. The Detroit Lions, when they drafted Gibbs and Jack, what's his name? Blanking on the line, Campbell, sorry. Yes, you can make that argument for basically any position if you just pull two random examples out and say, oh, the Panthers drafted Tet McMillan in the first round. They didn't improve that much. I mean, I guess, wait, that was a bad example because the Panthers made the playoffs. Even though they had a losing record, they made the playoffs. But the point is they still had a losing record. I think that this is a great comment, and this is what we're about to get to from MF Loco. Personally, I'm way more worried about the interior O-line than edge. So, Justin, this is where, when you're off the phone, I wanted to have this conversation because I can set it up while you finish this, although I don't know if I'm going to be able to just hold this for 10 minutes. Okay, we'll come back to this because this is the conversation that we're going to have. Where does Jackson Slater fit? Is Kevin Zeitler still an option? And how are the Titans going to address this in the draft? We have a pretty good story, actually. Tell the love story of how a Texan and a Canadian came to host a Titans pod. You know what? This is actually a great story, Atlas, and a great way to kill time while we wait for Justin to get off his radio appearance. But first, I'll answer Johnny's question. Do you think at this point Snead and Ridley are staying? I think no. My opinion on those two hasn't changed. Again, they still have until March 16th to make these decisions before roster guarantees kick in. With Snead, I think it's a foregone conclusion. He is gone. Now, whether they can get out of it with the $7.5 million saved or not is going to depend on Snead's ability to pass a physical. Ridley, I am leaning more towards maybe he's not gone, but I still don't think it's any guarantee. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if Sunday night the Titans released Calvin Ridley and L'Jarius Sneed. Wouldn't surprise me. If Ridley stayed on the roster at this point, that wouldn't surprise me either. But Sneed, there's no chance. They signed three cornerbacks this offseason. They drafted Marcus Harris last year. They're probably going to draft another corner at some point in this year's draft. That's five corners. Those are your top five corners. Micah Robinson is still on the roster. He would be your sixth. They're not gonna keep Sneed as well. I mean, doesn't fit. The pieces don't fit if you include Sneed in that grouping. So I really don't think that is going to happen, that Sneed's going to be on the roster. I do think there is a chance that Ridley stays because they haven't made another move at receiver except for tendering Bryce Oliver. So it wouldn't shock me. Either way, it wouldn't shock me. That one is much more up in the air in my opinion. All right. Justin Mello and I became acquainted over Twitter many years ago now. So I got my start as a Titans blogger and podcaster in 2013, with Titan Sized, actually, the site that Justin is now the managing editor of. Justin wasn't there. He had no connection to Titan Sized in 2013, but that's when I started. And I was actually writing fantasy football articles from a Titans player perspective. That's how I got my start into all this, was actually through fantasy football. Then I started hosting the Titan Sized podcast with my buddy John Shiretta, John Lucio on Twitter. He and I still text pretty much every day about the Titans, and he tunes into this podcast often. I gave him a shout out once before, like 2 months ago. Shout out my very first ever podcast co-host, John Shiretta. And then I transitioned, I graduated college, I stopped doing that. I started getting back into it a couple years later on the Music City Miracles platform, musiccitymiracles.com, just as a commenter. And it was me and Mike Herndon, dropped the mic, were big-time commenters, and a position opened. They wanted new writers on the MCM staff. And without even really having to apply, the comment section essentially pushed Mike and myself forward as like, you should hire these two guys because they always write really long, in-depth comments that are basically articles, and they should be writing articles. And so that was a very humbling moment for me, made me feel very proud of the work I put in. I would usually just like get really high at night and just go put my thoughts into comments. And you know, when you're locked in like that, you can write some long stuff. Anyway, that's how I sort of got on the radar as a Titans person, was then I became writing for Music City Miracles, had my Twitter account going, gaining followers. Justin was covering the Titans for other outlets. We ended up somehow joining the same direct message group on Twitter, a Twitter chat group. So we're all in the same group together, all these MCM writers, all these other Titans like fans and accounts that we knew through the comment section on MCM, which is how most of us really came to know each other. And Justin was added to that group as well. I was then at that point hosting a podcast with James, if you remember South Texas Titan. It was called the Titans Film Room Podcast. And at some point, Justin reached out to me, had gotten an offer to start a new Titans podcast from a company, a short-lived company called The Brawl Network. And we were going to host the Titans Brawl podcast. And some of you may have listened to the Titans Brawl podcast. If you have listened to Titans Brawl, let us know in the comments, because I'd like to hear if we have any listeners from that long ago. The Kitty Cat Jones, the glory days of MCM, 2013 to 2017. Absolutely. That was before they redid the comment section is when they really killed, in my opinion, the community around MCM. And we all just moved to Twitter, the ones that we cared about keeping in touch with. Anyway, so Justin comes to me and he's like, hey, I've got an offer to start this podcast called Titans Brawl. I don't know any of the technical podcast side, but I know the Titans and I'm connected and I can talk about them. You have a podcast. Do you know the technical side? Would you want to like add a second podcast to your plate and like do this with me? And I go talk to James about it. And I'm like, James, I don't know how you feel about doing this podcast. We've been doing it once a week, very hobby, like very low listenership. I think we had like 200 to 300 listeners per episode tops. And What happened after that was James was like, you know what? I'm kind of okay taking a step back. I don't really need to be doing this podcast anymore. I'm trying to focus on my career. James is now like a high-level cybersecurity analyst. So shout out to James. He's really made it in that field. Good for him. And I went back to Justin and I was like, you know what, Justin? I'm not really going to do this Titans Film Room podcast anymore. But I do know the technical side of podcast producing. I'd love to one day do it for a living. This is way back before I worked for NFL Media as a podcast producer. Justin and I start Titans Brawl. We didn't really know each other. We'd never met in person. We'd DM'd a little bit, but we'd really DM'd in a group. We hadn't like had direct personal conversations very often until we started setting up this podcast. We launched Titans Brawl. It's very short-lived, like 8 months or so. And the company, like, it came out that the leaders of the company were, like, just using people, promising payments, never paying, that going out and starting social media fights and, like, getting really, really just, like, cruel and mean and inappropriate and, like, racist and all kinds of bad stuff. So Titans Brawl disbanded. The Brawl Network disbanded. It ended up turning out that it was, like, a bunch of young 20-something-year-olds who started this company to rival the Locked On Network, and they just did it so terribly. But Justin and I had been podcasting together for about 8 months at that point, and we were like, we should keep this going. Like, let's come up with a new podcast name. And it was around the time that we started Broadway Sports Media. Justin and I were part of the founding group, along with like Zach Lyons, Mike Herndon, Chris Lawrence, running stuff on the back end, Jonathan Boren, Ryan Watson, Wes Wisely, all this whole group of guys. You guys know most of these people, right? Like, and this is most of the people, Robert Greenlaw, don't want to leave anybody out. I feel like I left somebody out. Apologies if I left you out. You know I love all of you involved in that group, right? So and then Justin and I kept doing Music City Audible. We linked up with Braden and 440 Sports to get us a platform to publish the show on. And that was sort of how Justin and I started podcasting together. And here we are, 550 episodes later. This episode that we're recording right now, or broadcasting, streaming live right now, is episode 550. Of the Music City Audible. That doesn't include the 50 or so pods we did for the Brawl Network before starting MCA. So we've done about 600 podcasts together. It also doesn't include podcasts that didn't get published as audio. So it's really probably closer to like 575 because a handful of these just lived as a live stream and never actually made it to the audio platform. Lebowski, good shout there, Atlas. That's the link to the MCM Discord group. If anyone is interested, a good shout there, J-Turn, sticking the link in the chat here. I can't find where you actually stuck the link, but I didn't even know that existed. But anyway, I don't know what else to talk about. So if you've got some questions here, that's the story. That is the story of how Justin and I found each other. We still never met in person, by the way. Me and Justin, never seen each other in person, but I feel like we've developed a real chemistry here. And it's really interesting that we are still doing this. Superhorn, I didn't mention Superhorn. Superhorn, best film breakdown guy I have ever known. Also a fellow Texas Longhorn alum. I didn't see the link, actually. I don't know. Ask who was that? J-Turn to put the link back out because I didn't actually see it. What do you prioritize in round 2 if you go Love It 4? This is a great question. I think, like, first of all, let me just say, I kind of hate doing this. We're going to do it. Justin's going to do it. I'm going to do it. We're going to do this all through the draft where we say, in this round, you could target this player. And it's sort of based on like where the position groups are deep and where the best ones are going to come off the board and where the value is to be had. Like, my answer is the best player. And I know that's a cop out. I do think like you could look at wide receiver if you really want to do this thing, like youth movement on offense, free agents on defense, rebuilding Salah's past defenses from different stops, and youth movement on offense where you add playmakers, starting last year, obviously, with the most obvious, Cam Ward, but also Shim Dike, Alec Iamanner, Gunnar Helm. And then this year, you move it forward. Jackson Slater, by the way, could be part of that offense youth movement from last year. You move it forward this year by continuing to invest high picks on that side of the ball. Jeremiah Love at 4, at 35, maybe. Does Denzel Boston make it to 35? Maybe, maybe not. Does Chris Brazel make it to 35? Chris Bell probably won't come off the board till the third round because of the knee injury he's dealing with. Anyone else I'm missing? KC Concepcion, I really like as a prospect, but you just signed Wandale Robinson. Can you make them both work? I do feel like if you drafted KC Concepcion, you might be looking at like a Luther Burden situation from last year where it's like the first 10 weeks of the season, we're like, they spent a second round pick on this guy. Is he ever going to play? And then towards the back half of the year, he starts getting worked in more and you're like, oh man, this guy can really make an impact. But I do worry about their ability to like share the field together because neither guy is particularly big, physical. They're both kind of slot. I think best in the slot, even Concepcion, I think best in the slot. I mentioned Denzel Boston. He's a really big guy that I like. But then also, if they decide that they've done enough for offense by drafting Love at 4, I could easily see them going on the defensive side of the ball at 35. Edge makes sense. Cornerback makes sense. I even think linebacker and safety could make some sense there, depending on who's on the top of the board. So that's the thing is like, don't lock yourself into a position. I'm talking to Mike Borgonzi. He's not going to, but don't lock yourself into one position. Take the best player available because at the state that this team is in, I think the biggest holes remaining are edge and interior offensive line. And that's one spot on the interior. It's either center or guard. And it depends on where if they re-sign Kevin Zeitler, then that hole kind of goes away. The center position would still be not that strong, but you could feel okay about the plan, hoping that Austin Schlottman can be a full-time starter for an entire season if Jackson Slater fails to level up his game to that point to where he can be your full-time starter and potentially even an upgrade. So I think they could go defense at 35. I think they could go wide receiver at 35. And at defense, on defense, like if they don't sign another edge and if they don't draft one at 4, then that becomes the big obvious hole on the defensive side of the ball. But if there's not a player you feel that's actually worth that pick at the edge position at 35, then just start stockpiling talent. It doesn't have to be for 2026. You can feel pretty good about a position group for 2026, but remember that the draft and the way general managers view the draft is not for one season. It's for the future, the next 3 to 4 to 5 years, maybe longer if the player hits and accomplishes everything you hope they accomplish and stays healthy. Like NFL careers are not that long. You don't really project them out 10 years. You project them out 3 to 5 years because you never know when an injury is going to just change a player's entire career trajectory or whatever. So you just need to acquire talent at every spot, especially the premium spots like cornerback. So I do think that it could go a lot of ways. I don't see them taking an offensive lineman at 35. I could see them taking a tight end if one of those super athletes is still on the board. I understand being nervous about Jackson Slater. I am too, and we're going to talk about some PK reporting here in a second when Justin gets off this call, which should be ending any second. I mean, these radio segments don't usually run longer than 12 to 13 minutes, and he's already been on for almost 14 minutes. So we'll see about that. Sorry, I was talking for a long time, and I missed a few of these comments that came in. I do think Restrepo is probably a practice squad guy this season. He's going to have a chance. Omar Cooper and TJ Parker are both there at 35. Who are you taking? I mean, it depends on what they do at 4. Cop out again. But if it's Love at 4 and these two guys at 35, I think I'm taking Omar Cooper just because I think he's a better player. Like, I think he's going to be a better player. I think TJ Parker has potential, but coming off a year that wasn't a great season, has me a little worried that, you know, you guys remember Kevin Dodd, right? Do I anticipate a trade back in rounds 2 or 3, similar to how they were able to land Helm, DK, and Iamanor? Yeah, I don't necessarily anticipate it, but I wouldn't not anticipate it either. I think that it's highly likely that Borgonzi looks to deal the pick. Now, whether he gets what he's looking for in that deal will determine if he actually does it, but I do think he's worth looking for it. Bellinger, to me, is, I mean, I don't know how they open training camp, but to me, Gunnar Helm is moving into the tight end one role and Daniel Bellinger will be the two. Now that could be interchangeable. There could be one tight end sets if they plan to run the ball where they keep Bellinger on the field. There could be two tight end sets where Helm stays in the block and Bellinger goes out for a pass. I do think Gunnar Helm continued to show improvement as a blocker specifically down the stretch of last season and is a guy that you can somewhat rely on for that role. But I think Gunnar Helm is a more dynamic player with the ball in his hands and a really, really good receive, like just has really good hands, like really soft hands, doesn't drop passes, plucks the ball out of the air from off the turf at the sideline, like really, really skilled player. So, yes. Is that Bell being who? Chris Bell? Bellinger. Figured Bellinger was here to block for Love. Yes, I agree, Curtis. You know how much I am just in love with Jeremiah Love. Shout out the Discord link. I don't know what Discord link you're talking about, J-Turn, but if you have it, please drop it in. I'm not really a big MCM member anymore, community member. I don't even frequent the site much, which I'm embarrassed to admit because Justin writes articles for Music City Miracle still. Do you think they wait until after the draft to decide on keeping Ridley? If they have the cap, why not keep him? Yeah, I kind of do. Like, you can post June 1st cut Ridley to save basically the amount of money that you're giving him in a roster bonus on March 16th. So this could be the way that things go. There could also be a trade market for Ridley if he looks good during the preseason. He looks healthy. He's got to be healthy. If he looks healthy during the preseason, like, there could be not a big trade market, but like a day three 2027 pick. How did we become Titans fans? A good question here. I mean, I don't know if I have enough time to get into that before Justin's going to be back on this thing. I think, let me do this. I'm going to toss it to our last audio break, and then we'll come back, and hopefully Justin will be done on the radio. And sorry, Atlas, I got distracted by your comment there. And we'll get back into the Jackson Slater convo and the draft plans convo that we were planning to have this entire time. So, one more break for the audio listeners. We'll be right back.
This episode sponsored by Good Ranchers. Good Ranchers delivers 100% American meat straight to your door. Every cut is sourced from local U.S. farms and ranches, and the entire packaging and fulfillment process takes place right here in America before it's delivered to your doorstep. No imports, ever. Just high-quality, 100% American beef, chicken, pork, and wild-caught seafood. I'm a subscriber, and my plan is incredibly easy to manage. Traveling? Need to skip a delivery? You can pause, move, or adjust your order anytime in just a few clicks. Right now, when you start your plan, you'll get free meat in every box for life, plus $25 off your first order with code RANCH25. Go to GoodRanchers.com and use code RANCH25 to start your Good Ranchers plan today.
Welcome back, audio audience and live streamers. We still have a little bit more time to kill here before Justin comes back on, so I'll answer this very philosophical question. Not philosophical, but kind of philosophical. How much pressure from Mr. Jones 6696? How much pressure is on Cam Ward? He was underwhelming last year. Now we've upgraded around him. He has to prove himself as worthy that number one pick we spent on him. So, advanced statistically speaking, I can see why you might think Cam Ward was underwhelming last year. Well, let's apply some context and also some regular stats. I mean, by regular stats, Cam Ward was pretty productive. I thought, especially since after the bye, when he threw 10 touchdowns against one interception, he really started to show improvement. That also coincides with Brian Callahan being fired. So let's look at the context. He had the worst head coach in the NFL last year. First guy fired out of every head coach that was fired in one of the biggest firing cycles we've ever had. I think tied for the most in one offseason. And he rose above in multiple instances, multiple games where he was the best player on the offense. I mean, you think about the Seahawks game. You think about the Cardinals game, which obviously included a lot of fluke moments that to set the Titans up to be even in a position to win that game. But Cam Ward, with the ball in his hands, drove them down the field when it mattered most and won that game. Again, the Seahawks game had a better game against the Seahawks defense than most every other quarterback this entire season. Way better than Drake May had in the Super Bowl, by the way. So I think it's wrong to say Cam Ward was underwhelming. I do think the pressure's on now. Like, a lot of the things that we wrote off in year one were rookie. This is a rookie. It's okay. This is going to take time. Yeah, his footwork's a little sloppy. Yeah, his accuracy is a little inconsistent because of that footwork. Yeah, he needs to learn to take the check down more and not be big play hunting so much. But, and so those excuses go away now into year two. It's like, we got to see less of those things. With a better coach around him, hopefully a better team around him, the pressure does mount a little bit. If Cam Ward doesn't show that he's the guy, I think he showed it in year one, but it's got to show up in the win column this year. It's got to show up with points on the scoreboard, with game-winning drives, that kind of thing. With Brian Daboll as his coach, as his offensive coordinator, and Saleh as his coach, with the added playmakers around him, especially if they go get a guy like Jeremiah Love, I do think the pressure is on in year two. Welcome back, Justin.
Have you seen Anchorman when Ron Burgundy breaks into the newsroom and says, "Well, I'm here. We can do the news now. We can do the news." And he didn't know that Veronica Corningstone was doing it alone the whole time. That's what I almost just did. I burst in here and said, we can do the show again. Oh, wait, Graver was doing it so well alone the entire time. I am back, as you said. And that was not planned earlier when we teased the new. It was Graver lost track of time. I told him I was doing radio 10:30. He tries to tee up that question at 10:27 as if we're not the most long-winded podcast in Titans history. And we were going to get through that in 3 minutes. You got to love him.
Okay, Justin, the Titans, I wouldn't say lost some players, but guys that we thought maybe they look to bring them back signed elsewhere in the last day or so. And that includes Corey Levin on the offensive line. It includes Mike Brown at the safety spot. It includes who else signed elsewhere? Oh, Chigga Conquo signed
Baker
with the Commanders.
Jr. Yeah, Darryl Baker Jr. signed. Jr. joins the Miami Dolphins. So they lost, was it three guys? It was Corey Levin, Darryl Baker, Chig. Did I miss one? Was there a fourth?
Levin, Baker, Chig. I said Mike Brown to the Patriots. I don't know if
I'm Mike Brown. Yes, Mike Brown to the Patriots. So that's four. So I think they lost four guys in total. The tidbit, should I just go ahead and just let the people know?
Yeah, so I think we're going to talk like they lost three guys that we weren't expecting them to bring back. Chig, after they signed Bellinger, we were like, Chig's gone. Mike Brown was sort of in the air, but I wasn't really expecting it. Arden Key to the Colts, yes, but that was had to happen on day one. And we weren't expecting them to bring Arden Key back either. And Darryl Baker, like, would have been cool to bring back. But after they signed Josh Williams, it was like, they don't need him and Josh Williams. But Corey Levin was the one that was like, the Titans haven't signed what we feel is a true starting level center. Maybe it's Austin Schlottman, maybe it's Jackson Slater. But Corey Levin could at least be a nice fallback plan. Corey Levin signs with the Atlanta Falcons, reunites with Bill Callahan, and you heard something. And I think this is what is very revealing about the Titans' draft plans.
Yeah, somewhat, I think. But first off, the second that they signed Austin Schlottman, I was under the impression that Corey Levin wouldn't be back. I kind of saw them as very similar players in terms of high-level veteran backup who could start for you in a pinch, but you're probably not in the best situation if you go into the season with him as your starter. So for me, you need one of those guys. It's redundant to have two. I love Corey Levin. I'm the biggest Corey Levin fan in the world. I probably would have brought Corey Levin back. But it goes back to what I said. When you have new coaches, a lot of times they want their guys. You make sacrifices. Austin Schlottman, who played for Brian Daboll, is the new Corey Levin. After Corey Levin signed with the Falcons yesterday, which again, I kind of saw coming after the Schlottman signing, I did some poking around. And speaking to multiple sources, what I was able to come away with was that the Titans were actually still in on signing Corey Levin, but it did sound like they were trying to wait until after the draft. They had poked around, spoke to him, his representative, whatever, and said, we're still interested, but it's probably not something we're going to do right now. We'd love to do it after the draft. Now, listen, NFL teams are inherently selfish, right? To me, and this is me analyzing that, I should say. This part doesn't come from a source. That's a team trying to keep their options open. What it tells me is that they're probably going to try to draft a center in the mid rounds, whether that's I think the second is probably a little early. I would say more likely the third or the fourth. And if the board doesn't fall the way that they want it to, the backup plan was probably to sign Corey Levin in early May, to go back to Levin and say, we'd like to have you back. That tells me a lot about the mid-round, the third or fourth round draft plan, because I think if you're trying to say, we want to sign you back, but we want to do it after the draft, listen, teams are inherently selfish. That's just, hey, you're my, you know, if my date cancels on me, do you want to go out for drinks? You know, that's kind of what that is to me. Corey Levin, understandably, why would you wait, right? He found a team that I'm told really wanted him in Atlanta. They were serious about pursuing him. He's from the area. It's an opportunity to reunite with Bill Callahan. And they were willing to sign him on March 11th, not on May 1st, right? So he makes the best decision he can make for himself.
Yeah, Corey Levin, who cares? He's gone. I mean, he was a great Titan and we liked his role, but this isn't about Corey Levin. This is about what the Titans are going to do in the draft because of what you found out about Corey Levin. And the idea that they wanted to potentially sign him after the draft is so revealing. They're drafting an interior offensive lineman. Now, obviously, the caveat you added about depends on how the board falls. Very real. They're not going to probably reach for a guy and, you know, just draft a position for the sake of that position. But it tells us they have their eyes on at least one, if not a handful of guys on that interior of the offensive line that they're planning to bring in. And if they couldn't bring them in, then they're planning to re-sign Corey Levin, who they obviously can't now. This is so telling about how they've addressed the center position and that right guard spot. And PK's article, Paul Kaharsky, wrote an article about how it's titled something like Jackson Slater is the first test of Titans draft and develop methodology or something like that. And he wrote a separate article yesterday or the day before about how the Titans are still weighing their options with Kevin Zeitler and how Kevin Zeitler himself is still weighing his options. Is Kevin Zeitler in a similar situation to Levin where they're like, if we get, you know, at pick 35, we take the best guard on the board, possibly, or maybe it's in the third round. Do we need Kevin Zeitler back? Or do we see which lineman we were able to draft, and then we re-sign Kevin Zeitler to be like the stopgap starter, but maybe somebody else takes over if he gets hurt or if he's better or whatever.
I'm doing guesswork now when you ask that question. I would think they've got a higher opinion of Kevin Zeitler than they do Corey Levin. I think they would probably be very happy, very content to bring Zeitler back right now and start him at right guard. Again, that's guesswork, but I don't think it's the same. I think Levin... that's the more revealing part of my source. I think he's the backup plan, or was the backup plan, to them trying to draft a center, I would guess, in the third or fourth round. I think 35 is way too early. Even given their current situation at center, I think 35 is way too early to go center. And I don't think one, frankly, there's no one worthy. Like, this is a really weird center class. There's a lot of value, I think, in like the 90 to 120 range, maybe even up to 150, I would go. I'd go all the way up to 150, but I wouldn't take one before like the, you know, late third, even where they're picking in the third round, to be honest with you. I think it's a little early. Like, for me, I don't value the position. I don't rate the position super highly. You've got a floor raiser in the, I guess I've been pronouncing the guy's name from the Giants wrong the whole time. Someone said in the chat, apparently it's got an interesting pronunciation. Doesn't sound like how it's spelled at all. I mean, it doesn't even sound like how it's spelled. There's no way to pronounce that spelling of that name. So, But I like, they've got a floor raiser there. They've got Jackson Slater. I want to talk about that PK article a little bit, but I think you go center in the third or fourth round. Even in the, like I said, the third is early for me. I would almost trade back if that's my plan. Like, to, you know, get another fourth round pick and trade to like the 80, 90 range if I want to take a center in the third round. So,
yeah.
I think, and there are centers I like. We can run through them if you'd like, but
let's save it. Let's not spoil all the content. We got a whole April month to fill before the draft. We'll definitely do an entire episode on centers. I promise you guys that. Justin, I got to jump in about 2 minutes. I got to get on a call for work. Let's do the Jackson Slater thing, because I do think you're right. PK raised some interesting points about how the building potentially views Jackson Slater as a potential starter.
Yeah, I'll be quick because you've got to run, but it sounds like mixed reviews. And is he ready? Is he not ready? Some people might think he is. Some might think he's not. That's what Kaharsky's reporting in that story. And no surprise to me. What did I say? He's a center. I said it coming out. I said it yesterday. He's a center. Apparently, some of those people believe he's a center because he has struggled with putting on and sustaining weight. And as you know, weight, play strength, more important at guard than it is center. Remember when they moved Aaron Brewer from guard to center for that reason? Slater, not quite as light in the pants as Brewer was, but he might still be a little light in the pants for their preference at guard. Insinuates what I've thought, he's going to compete at center this offseason, but he might not be ready. Very mixed reviews on that, according to PK.
Yeah, so it definitely sounds like the Titans' plan is Austin Schlottman, backup, floor raiser. He's your starter if nobody else can, like, claim the job.
Yep.
Jackson Slater, contender number one. They want him to win it to pay off on the draft pick they spent on him last year on a cheap rookie fifth-round contract. If he wins it, that is the best-case scenario. Right guard, potentially a draft pick. Center, potentially a draft pick. or potentially Kevin Zeitler. So that's where they're going right now. So I don't think that they've necessarily like failed Cam Ward or set him up to play behind what could be a poor interior offensive line with questionable tackles who you don't have that much confidence in. But they all, PK also mentioned that one of the reasons they hired Carmen Brasillo to be the offensive line coach, not only his familiarity with Daboll, obviously, but you know he's got to convince Saleh that this guy can do the job, and they've got to convince Borgonzi that they're making the right hire. It's what he's done, the work he's done with mid and late round draft picks as well, getting them up to, you know, at least a capable level, even if they're not all-star players. So I think that, you know, we got to be a little more patient here as they build out this interior of the offensive line. Remember, they don't play football till September, guys. So there's plenty of time and there's plenty of pathways to continue improving this position. All right, it is 11 o'clock Central. I'm supposed to be on a call right now, so I got to run. I do want to remind everybody that we'll be live again tomorrow. Justin, should we continue the 10 a.m. thing that we've been doing all week, or are we going to our regular Friday 10:30 time?
I think we go 10 a.m. We've done it Monday to Friday. We go 10 a.m. Central tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. Eastern. Make sure you are here. Tune to the channel. Uniform reactions, more free agency and draft talk. Until tomorrow morning, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.
Sleeping hot? Waking up sweaty at 2 a.m.? It's not you. It's your sheets. And Care Aloha is your answer. They're the original for bamboo sheets that are naturally breathable, moisture-wicking, and luxuriously soft, designed to keep hot sleepers cool and comfortable all night long. You can feel the difference in how much cooler you sleep. Care Aloha's innovative bamboo fabric pulls heat away from your body, so you fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer without cranking the AC. Improve your sleep tonight. Shop Care Aloha bamboo sheets now at carealoha.com. That's carealoha.com. Cooler sleep starts with Care Aloha.
This episode sponsored by We Feed Raw. Have you ever actually looked at the label on your dog's food? Most dog food labels are a long list of things that don't look like food. Powders, starches, additives used to hold ultra-processed kibble together. At We Feed Raw, the label looks very different. High-quality meat, nutrient-rich organs, complete and balanced nutrition formulated by PhD nutrition experts. No fillers, no artificial preservatives, just real ingredients that support your dog's whole body health. That's why many pet parents see real changes after switching to We Feed Raw's fresh meals. If you want to feed your dog one of the healthiest diets possible, We Feed Raw makes it simple. Right now, new customers can get 40% off their starter box plus free shipping. Visit We Feed Raw at wefeedraw.com to get started today.